right, welcome, folks, to another episode of Mention and Dispatches here with the Armchair Dragoons. And we've got a full house of Dragoons tonight for a particular important purpose tonight. First, from left to right on your podcast dial, we have multiple mics. The loud one is OJ's dad, Mr. Mike O. Mr. Mike O, how are you tonight?
I'm good.
All righty. And glad to hear that. And then we have the other mic, the low mic on the totem pole. Mr. Mike C, BB Mike, how are you tonight?
Well, except for my microphone, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine that, having a mic that doesn't work.
I don't.
and the guy who rarely needs volume adjusting, Mr. Cyrano himself, the ringleader of our Saturday night fights. Cyrano, Mr. Jim, how are you?
I am doing, I'm doing well under the circumstances. A pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. And glad we could make arrangements for this, because we have an annual tradition to uphold here. We're going to rattle it around in the background. Tonight is the night in which we delve through the latest Compass catalog to come out. This, I think we've mentioned this literally every year we've talked about it, but this is what passes for the Sears wish book for us, you know, grown-up kids. This is as close as we're ever going to get to that Sears Christmas catalog showing up, now that absolutely nobody prints catalogs or phone books anymore. What's astounding is how cool these catalogs are when everybody gets them. Like, we all get them and we go gaga over them and, you know, love looking through them. And like, they're the only company that does this.
It's, well, as I've said, I got to go to bat. Kevin Zucker. Now, nothing like this. Okay.
Zucker's got like, what, 12 games?
Stop it. No, but Zucker's catalogs are old school. They're bigger. They're slick. They're very colorful, filled with period art. He spends a bucket of money on those suckers for reasons that evade me, especially because it's like, Kevin, we're your fan base, dude. You know,
yeah,
we're lined up with our wallets open. Who are you trying to persuade? I would say that, but you're right. You're right. Nothing touches this crazy Compass production.
Kevin may see it as sort of a community service, giving back, knowing that the fans are going to go gaga over it, that, hey, this is something cool that I know my fans will enjoy.
We do.
So, well, yeah. But I really hope that, like, GMT and Multiman and our buddy Dave over at Lock and Load, that all these guys are listening. This Compass Games catalog is the shit, and we spend an entire podcast episode on this thing every fall. So y'all get your butts in gear. Start sending out some wicked cool paper catalogs like this. And let's you know, give us some more fodder to go through with the, because, well, it's one thing, like, you can find all that information on our website. Well, sure you can, but, you know, the idea of sort of serendipitous discovery, sort of flipping through those things, you know, just sort of randomly stumbling across something you had no idea, or a really cool piece of art catching your eye that would never catch your eye if you don't click over to that page. So, you know, give us the cool factor, people. Give us the cool factor. Mike O, OJ's dad, what caught your eye flipping through the Compass Games 2020 holiday catalog? What was the first thing that grabbed your attention?
Third World War. Pre-ordered it at the beginning of the year and was disappointed to see it's not shipping until middle of next year now. However, on Compass's weekly town hall on Thursdays, they explained that they're doing some new counters production here in the U.S. that are going to be bigger and thicker. So that's a large part of the reason some of these games are slipping into later next year.
Yeah. Yeah. What's interesting is these guys have at least three games that you would think would totally cannibalize each other's sales that are all right in that same vein. Because you've got the Third World War, the designer signature edition from Frank Chadwick. Right above it, you've got the Doomsday Projectum, because there's a typo in there. From Adam Starkweather. And then over on the other panel, you've got NATO Next War in Europe, Designer Signature Edition, which is the Bruce Maxwell game. And so you've got three things that you would think would all be very close to being on top of each other there. And you know what? They're going to sell them all probably to the exact same people. They're going to buy all three.
Yeah.
I've been following the Doomsday Project on ConSimWorld for 6, 7, 8 years now. It's not been lingering about quite as bad as Orange Crush has, but it's also not nearly as threatened into obsolescence as Orange Crush has become. But I've been following the Doomsday Project for a while, and at one point it almost looked like the Doomsday Project was going to become the Third World War Project, and then they decided, no, we're going to keep them separate. We're going to do Doomsday separate from Third World War, and here we are.
Here we are.
So, BB Mike, what was the one that caught your eye right as you were flipping?
Well, so first and foremost, I think one of the really cool things about this catalog is, and it hits you every time you open it, when you unfold this thing to its full glory, you realize you're holding basically a standard size map for a board game. It's like the 33x22 or whatever. There's a lot to take in, and it's awesome. But you know, the thing that caught my eye, of course, were the pre-orders I've got in. But the biggest one for me is Death in the Trenches, which is a Ben Madison and Wes Ernie game. And those are the guys that did Don't Tread on Me, one of my favorite games of all time. So I'm really looking forward to that one. It's not solitaire, Cyrano. It is a two-player game. Of course, I will play it solitaire. But
I was going to say, where are you going to find another player?
Really looking forward to it, though. And then the other one is there's two other ones that I'm really looking for. Okay, there's three other ones I really saw. The other one is War for America. It's by Gilbert Collins, and he also has like a web channel where he reviews video games and stuff, or board games. And I think that one's going to be really cool. And the two others are Pacific games, go figure. And one of those is Pacific War, and the other is Carrier Battle Philippine Sea.
Yeah, yeah. Who would have seen you coming for a couple of PTO games there?
I know.
So,
and no matter as much as I've crawled all over the Compass Games, you know, website, when you look at the catalog, it is completely different. You see things you did, like you said, there's places you don't click. Here you're forced to see them, so it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, all right, Jim, what was the one that jumped out and grabbed you?
I think, Brant, that your point is probably the best one, which is how is this one company selling the same, you know, well, my game, let me say right off the bat, is Napoleon's Imperium. And I don't know what I think about this game. I'm deeply, deeply conflicted. If you do a deep dive on this game, this guy who developed this game has been working on it, I think it's 30 years, if you watch his promo video. And he has built this game into nothing short of a lifestyle. Go and watch the video and never again tell me I'm obsessed about anything. Okay. I won't hear it. This guy has built. No, I do not yet gather around my gaming table in outfits. And not only that, but have a full coalition set up, i.e. I've got all the major powers, the seven major powers in the Napoleonic War. All seven of them are wearing period appropriate uniforms. He apparently has this set up, and he has built this gorgeous, gorgeous table that's got to be, I'm guessing, 10 feet across, and it's an oval shape. Yeah, he's been doing this for 30 years. It's an oval shaped table. He carved it out of wood. It's a beautiful handmade inlaid board, and the map is in the center of it, and he's playing with all these guys in uniform. And you look at this and you say to yourself, as I would clearly say, dude, you want me to come over to your house and play this game? Oh, and by the way, all the pieces, all the units are 54-millimeter soldiers.
Wow.
With drawers that slide out of this handmade thing. The ships, by my looking at them, seem to be Sails of Glory ships. He has that many of them. And you slide them around this elaborate table. So I saw this and I loved it. And then I said, wait a minute. And I looked at the Kickstarter and I looked at it and I said, wait a minute. First of all, probably got to have it. But it's not, it can't look like this coming from Compass. It just can't. You know, because
you
can't.
I don't think they're going to deliver and set up a table for you.
Right. And well, you know, are you sure? Have you spoken to them? Have you asked? I'm willing to have the conversation, I guess is my point. But it, you know, it's such a spectacular game. And then I go in here and I look and I see, oh, okay, it's a little more mortal than all that, I guess I would say. It's still got the oval map, but now it's on a flat fold-out. It's not even a mounted map. It's got some lovely cards and things. But this is the same company, the very same, that has at least two other that I can think of, and certainly the big one being Nation in Arms, which is a direct, now it's more complex, but it's a direct competitor.
Yeah.
How many grand or strategic level, I should say, strategic level Napoleonic games? Plus, in their magazine, they put out Pitts War, which is another strategic level Napoleonic game. So they've got notionally 2.5 of these. And may I also note that Nation in Arms is $130.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's not cheap. Napoleon's Imperium at the pre-order price is $120. So, you know, Compass is in, and God love them for it.
This is on top of knowing full well that all of those same customers just paid for the War and Peace Kickstarter, you know.
Over at One Small Step.
Yeah.
Yeah, which,
not,
by the way,
not that Compass should be concerned with whether or not One Small Step is selling something. Like, that's – but you got to know your market, and it appears these guys work under the assumption that our wallets are bottomless. And every year when we do this podcast, you guys attempt to prove them right. So.
Well, but, you know, do I want the gigantic Napoleonic game with a billion pieces? Don't ask rude questions. That's offensive. But by the same token, I note solitaire suitability, 4 out of 10. Gotta play with friends.
No, apparently you haven't heard. That's not true. It says solitaire medium in the catalog. And to me, that's easy.
Just for the record, do we have I turn on your channel to check it out. I do enjoy it, even though you're doing this weird solitaire thing. You're playing Napoleon's Last Battles, which I think I'm on record saying is my favorite war game of all time. Any sense what the solitaire rating on that one is?
Napoleon's Last Battles?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's very good. it's easy solitaire play.
What are other people rated it for, or what is Mike pulling off?
Yeah, well, that's true. No, Mike's doing a fine job. I mean, but
because those are two different questions.
I'm going to avoid the obvious cheap shot and just say Mike has obviously raised solitaire play to a form. So I give respect in that regard. But to answer your question, Brant, it is Napoleon's Imperium, a big box, big ticket. Napoleonic, how many players? I think they did go to 8.
For some reason
it's 8. I'm curious who the 8th player is.
Probably the Americans.
Right. That's just to be dingy about it. But yeah, so here's the thing. I don't hate it for this, but the map is 33, so it's essentially 3x4.
Yeah.
Which isn't bad, but it's not what's in the video.
I do want to call attention to something, though, to see if either of the mics picked up on it. You notice when Jim was describing this guy's setup with the massive, hand-carved oval table with the drawers and the guys in the period costumes, Jim at least twice used the word yet.
It's true, he did. So, yes, I heard that.
So here's the question, Jim. Does your wife know about this?
Look. What was their name? Geek Chic.
Yeah.
The people that did the gigantic tables.
The fancy gaming table, yeah.
Yes. We had long spec'd. We just could never get it to fit. I always had clearance anytime I wanted to get the big one. We could never fit it in there. But I'm not kidding. You've got to watch this video. He's standing there why does everybody want Hussar uniforms? I don't understand. But he's standing there.
They should
want
Dragoon uniforms, damn it.
That's true. But this is Hussar. And he's got his Hussar uniform on, and he's standing over this table, and just given the average human wingspan, I'm guessing this table is an oval 10 feet across.
Yeah,
and all and it's a handmade poker table, so everybody's got their own little station. I'm like, yeah, that's the way I could spend the rest of my life, just every day get up for another have at it. So it's going to suffer by comparison to its original magnificence, but Napoleon's Imperium, gonna check it out.
Hey, you can build. You can build that table in Tabletop Simulator.
I can build
your
table.
Yes, you can. Your 8th nation in Napoleon's Imperium is the Nordic nations.
Okay. First of all,
of Sweden and their sidekicks.
Now I'm going to be real, real angry.
I'm looking at the website right now.
No, I didn't say you were lying.
No. I'm just saying. So it shows the French Imperial Allies as being the French Empire, the Ottoman Empire, the Spanish, and the Austrians. And then the British Coalition and allies is the English, the Nordic, Russian, Prussians, and the Russians.
All right, well, I'm still adding it to my watch list.
Bernadotte. That's Bernadotte.
How
are you going to play a game with battle cards?
The reason I just sort of randomly threw in the Americans as a thought there was, given the War of 1812 and the potential naval influence that the U.S. could have, should they choose to exert, look, it's not going to flip the tide of the battle one way or the other, but is it enough to annoy the British into distraction to allow the French to get into more mischief? Perhaps. We're obviously sidelining off into some alternate history there, but that was the reason I was thinking the Americans might be in there. But Mike, what you're saying, you know, with having those Nordic nations in there sort of makes sense as to what's already around the map. So that seems to fit. So, Jim, obviously I'm expecting that Napoleon's Eagles and Eagles 2 are already on your pre-order list as well.
Well, I've already got Napoleon's Eagles.
Okay.
That was out a while ago. I was in the Kickstarter for that. That's when I picked up my copy of Wagram and Mr. Pitt's War. I'm looking. Yeah, I will get to, of course. No, yes.
Don't be silly.
Well, it's the only thing about it is that the cool thing about Napoleon's Eagles, it was actually interested in something other than either the Peninsula Sharp or the Hundred Days. It actually went into battles, some of which, you know, some of the dragoons have crawled around on, Wagram and Eylau and Friedland and some of these others. I really like it for that. That's really cool. Well, guess what they're doing for Volume 2, The Hundred Days. So,
yeah, of course.
You know, and I understand. Every World War II game's got to have its Normandy set up, and every Civil War game has to have its Gettysburg, so that's where they're going. So it's not as exciting as it would be if they were picking something in, you know, they're just would it kill you to do 1806? Would it kill you to do Marengo, etc.? But no, of course. Card game.
Cairo. Give us more. We need more games on Cairo.
Nobody wants the Battle of the Pyramids. The folks at Avalanche tried it, and the game is okay, but probably the best treatment of that is Viersen's Napoleon Commander.
But was that a function of Avalanche, or was that a function of the battle?
Oh, it's a function of the battle. I mean, it's not a fight. It never was. Napoleon will tell you it was a fight, but it never was. They formed square and walked slowly towards the Arabian horses and shot them dead. It was not much of a fight.
Yeah.
So no, I do have Napoleon's Eagles ordered.
One thing I do want to call attention to in the big layout of the catalog here, because this was something that I found as I was kind of reading through some things, there are obviously, like every other war game company out there, there are a handful of tried and true systems that they're going to use to crank out games on multiple battles so that the audience really learns one system and then can play 12 games. And that makes absolute sense, right? ASL has built their industry on this. But looking at the catalog, I would expect just from this is me putting my marketing branding hat on, right? You know, I've only got a master's degree in this stuff. Why can't you pick out the OSS games just right off the top of your head? You know, there are a handful of them. If you read the descriptor for Test of Faith by Adam Starkweather is a new game in the operational scale series using new added rules from the Doomsday Project, blah, blah, blah. You know, Doomsday Project is a sub-series of the operational scale system featuring wars that never happened. As you look through the catalog at a bunch of the different games, there are a handful of these things that are in series. And yet there is no obvious visual identifier to distinguish those series within the catalog anywhere. Yeah. And so Compass, if you're listening, hope you are. Thank you. Welcome. Glad you joined us. But maybe next year, put a little OSS logo in the corner of the different OSS games just to help you more easily identify some of the things that might be in that same series. Same with the CSS series, same with whatever other series you want to pay attention to. In the back of my mind, that would be a good, helpful visual cue for people looking through your catalog, looking for specific games.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, I mean, just looking at the colored backgrounds on the squares, if they made, you know, like all those ones you're talking about, say, just one of these colors, so they're all gray, like Test of Faith, you'd go right to it.
Yeah, well, one of the challenges there is that a bunch of them have artwork from the games as the backgrounds in their squares.
Yeah, you can kind of sort of see that, but, they, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they try to put everything in alphabetical order. In some ways, that makes sense. But, Brant, you're right. At the same time, they could have grouped or like you said, just put the OSS logo in a corner or something.
I don't mind if they're not grouped.
I'm just saying they could have gone that route. They could have done, you know, there's a few different ways that they could have done that to get games of similar, you know, series put together. You know, the other thing with the Test of Faith, if you read that description here in the catalog, I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be World War III battles, you know, from, you know, the way it kind of read. But you go to the website, it's actually the Arab-Israeli wars in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there's nothing here in this catalog that really kind of gives you that detailed description that a lot of these others do.
And to be fair, that one's a little further off than some of the other ones that are in here. Obviously, the ones that are in print already, there's a little better descriptor, a little better visual attachment to it. Test of Faith doesn't even have a mocked-up box cover the way many of the others do. You know, Napoleon's Imperium's got the box cover and the map right there. Like, you can see what's coming in that box. The ones, you know, BB Mike, to go back to your point of some of these things are just basic colored boxes with backgrounds, those are all the ones that are pushed so far out that the artwork's not even ready for them yet. And so that makes sense. I can't fault them for that point. To me, it doesn't need to be anything overt. It doesn't need to be anything blatant. It doesn't even necessarily need to be grouped. I'll tell you, Mike, until you mentioned the alphabetization, I didn't even really notice, in part because I'm reading up and down more than I'm reading left and right, but also because all of the "the"s are grouped together, whereas I usually just ignore "the" in the alphabetization of things.
Right.
You know, I would have if that was the case, I would have expected Doomsday Project to be under the D's. But it's, you know, what you're describing makes sense. It's just, you know, again, for me, just from a branding standpoint, I would think that would be a helpful thing for your audience. It in no way detracts much from the glory that is this awesome catalog of going through some things here. But it does still, you know, you do a good job of indicating when things are shipping, mid-2021, late-2021. You know, that we're getting a sense of when they will be showing up. It would be helpful to know when some of those things are connected to others.
The other point to that, too, is will they hit their ship marks? So I ordered two games at the beginning of this year, Third World War and Schutztruppe. I ordered them both back in January during their last sale. Ordered them as pre-orders. And at the time that I ordered them, they were advertised as being shipping by the end of this year. Well, now they've both pushed back to next year. So, you know, now I'll be honest, I'm going to be hesitant to go out and pre-order something right now, especially when I see Silent War Deluxe Edition, late 2021, as an example. It's like, well, you know, is that going to be December next year?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and let's be honest, there are plenty of wargame companies that don't hit their shipping estimates of when things actually go out the door. You know, Academy Games was 6 months late, almost, getting Mare Nostrum out the door after their Kickstarter. You know, the Storm in the Gap showed up late from Lock and Load. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, I think those guys were, to an extent, victims of their own success. Those were Kickstarters that blew up into some massive successes that, you know, they just had way more product to ship than they were planning for. Right. I'm wondering, though, in the context of this specific year, how much we want to give folks a mulligan on the fact that the plague sort of screwed with everybody's plans. You had trouble getting stuff shipped back from overseas. You had trouble being able... How many of those pre-orders went away when people lost jobs and had to start canceling stuff? Now, all of a sudden, your printing may be getting pushed back. Your printing press itself may have shut down for, you know, a month or two or three to send everybody home and try and contain this thing. So more than just about any other year, I at least am willing to give them a bit of a pass on missing some shipping dates in 2020.
I totally agree. The other thing that's nice, though, is communication. Right?
Yeah.
And for folks listening to this, if you're not aware, Thursday nights at 8:00 Eastern, Compass hosts a town hall on YouTube. And you get on there, you get on the chat. They broadcast it on both YouTube and Facebook. You get on there, you get on the chat, you ask questions, they'll answer those questions. You know, why is this being delayed? And they'll tell you right up front, here's the problems. Yeah. Here's where we stand. So I will give them many kudos for that.
And truthfully, if we weren't recording our podcast on a Thursday, unlike our normal Tuesday, probably at least three of the four of us would be dialed into that thing right now. So
yeah, I missed it tonight because we were doing this and I had to take care of some other things before tomorrow. So
yeah, we are off slightly from our normal schedule. Normally we do this on Tuesday nights. This particular week we were pushed back to Thursday. And so that's costing us viewership of the Compass Town Hall. But who cares? We've got the Compass catalog in front of us, so it's all good and well.
You know, there's another thing that surprised me with this is I had the catalog in hand, and that night I watched the Compass Town Hall, and there was actually two games in the catalog they still had not announced on their website as pre-orders yet.
Which two were those?
And they've been announced already since then, but it was Brothers at War and Napoleon Eagles 2.
Okay.
They had not announced those on the previous 2 weeks of town halls when they announced like 16 others.
Yeah.
You got the catalog, and if you didn't realize that you had games in there that they hadn't announced and had not even gone up under their website yet for pre-order.
Yeah. We do our Tuesday Newsday dump, and Compass, on the heels of one of their town halls, they announced 7 new pre-orders in that town hall, and we're like, holy crap. So, you know, we made a big deal out of it on our Tuesday news dump. You know, oh my gosh, check it out. Compass just dumped a whole bunch of games on pre-order. Here's some info about them. And by the time that was out, they had announced like 9 more. And so the headline for the next week's Tuesday Newsday was, oops, Compass did it again. And here we go with more. So
they're on a roll lately. It's amazing how much, that they are announcing. It's hard to keep up with.
Well, and the crazy thing about it, though, is GMT will announce a ton of P500s on a regular basis, because with all those P500s coming out, they're either going to make their numbers or they're not. When they make their numbers, they go to press, unless, you know, Mystery Wizard gets in the way. And otherwise...
I'm still here.
Yeah, I know. Just checking. Otherwise, they make their numbers, they go to press, off they go.
Compass, no, they don't, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, theoretically.
P1500, yes.
Yeah, I mean...
P500 plus 3 years.
The hot garbage that is P500. But go ahead.
But in the meantime, Compass isn't putting these on P500. They're not saying, hey, hit a certain number and then we'll go to press. They're saying, we're going to press. Go ahead and get your money in.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not actually what's going to happen. Maybe it is sort of a stealth P500. But Compass has given no indication that they need a certain number of pre-orders to take these things to press. They have said, we're sending 22 new games to press. Get your, you know, get it cheap now while you can. So there should be the
attitude. That's why I don't mind pre-ordering from Compass Games. I mean, it may say, you know, late 2021, but it's coming. I know it is. And if I forget about it, it's just one more surprise for me, you know, in late 2021. I know it's coming.
But honey, I have no idea when I ordered this.
I ordered this years ago. Yeah, exactly.
But let's be clear. They also do a lot of Kickstarter.
They do.
You know, which is another approach essentially to what P500 is trying to do, which is to say, get money in hand.
Yes.
Counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I know Napoleon's Eagles was, Jacobite Rising was. I'd be very curious to know, Dawn of Empire was. I'd be very curious to know what they think, what it is that makes them go and say yes and say no. And parenthetically, they had one which, in fact, I backed that I thought was going to fail, their game Coalition.
Okay.
Napoleonic Wars, I'm going to surprise you. But it had a very, very low, but it's also one of those telling signs. It's a board game, but it's got a $2,500 funding level. You know, so it's more gauge of interest, things like that. Get a little money in advance. Yeah, I get it. See, I was right. They do have this is essentially their fifth strategic level, grand strategic level Napoleonic game, all from the same company.
And you know what, guys, like, you were buying every one of them, so they know they can sell them.
Okay, so then let me ask the question. I may have asked this last year at this time, and if I did, I apologize. Okay, for us, it's obviously a sweet, sweet memory of getting, whether it be the Sears Roebuck Dream Book or maybe the SPI catalog, which I certainly got and loved, all that stuff. Other than us, who's this thing for?
So I'm good. this might shock some of the audience, given how I am frequently the war game evangelist of let's go get other people into our hobby. I don't care. It's for me. Like, I'm already a customer. I'm already a fan. I don't care. I think this is cool.
But here's the point. But that's exactly my point. like, dude, like, you were under an iron sky, your financial issues notwithstanding, right? Like, yeah. you were gonna somehow miss under an iron sky.
Or less than 60 miles. Yeah, nah. Totally.
Holy cow, Under an Iron Sky came out, and I didn't buy it. No, didn't. Not in this world or the next.
And on that subject, as I look at this catalog, you know, the teen me is looking at this thing, and I see that Compass Games order form, and I'm like, I want to rip this out and write a check and mail it in and buy something. Who is doing that?
You just jumped my route, because that was my next question. Even if you could come up with an adequate answer to my first question, which you haven't, you then have to say, and you're the one that prompted these thoughts, by the way, Brant, with your conversation about an utter lack of branding.
Yeah.
You know, this is someone threw all these games into a giant bin and had it vomited all over the page.
Well, the vomit did come out in alphabetical order, right? To Mike O's credit, he did point out that there was some sequencing to it.
Yep. And I'm responsible. I am a manager of, among other things, a reference library. And I'm going to go into that reference library tomorrow morning and say, all right, you know what? We're changing our organizational system. All your thousands of texts will now be alphabetical.
And that'll be the last time we see Jim.
Yeah, because at that point, all the librarians shoot me. So, no, we don't do that. And then the third point I was going to make was BB Mike's, which is, wait a minute. Who? Let's actually look at it, because it's just that funny.
It's awesome to look at it. It's
it is. It's on the back. What's it? Page 1, 2, 3.
I really want to use it.
To be fair, the last time Jim O and I were making fun of a paper mail-in form on which you write your credit card, I believe it was registration for like Gen Con 12 in an old episode in an
Thank
old
you.
Dragon magazine.
Thank you. Yes. Back in Dragon of the Past days.
Well, that's what's so cool about this one is it says, you know, it's, you don't not credit card, but also says you, checks and money orders.
Well, there, I think if you go back to one of their town halls, when they first announced this in their town hall about 3 weeks ago, maybe four, there was a reason they did this. And there's something that sets this apart from ordering online. And I do not remember what it is. May have to go back.
Oh, it's the very first line in the below part. Special deal. If your merchandise total is more than $399, yep, take $30 off. Not available online.
Yes.
And there so, we go.
Thank you.
So first of all, who, besides Jim and the Napoleonics, who's spending $399? $30 off is not inconsequential, but the point at which you're already having to hide $400 worth of game purchase from your spouse, I think is a little, you know, the $30 is a nice perk to have. Doesn't it cost them $30 just in, you know, labor and processing to open the envelopes and take the checks to the bank?
Stop though. What human being in 2021 can you commend the practice of writing down your credit card and your CCV code?
No, that's why you send the money order. You go down to the convenience store and get your money order.
Okay. I'm going to buy these games from Compass and I got to get that money order. Is that free with my checking account? Who is this? If my son told me he was writing it down, I would slap him. Write down your credit card and mail it somewhere?
Let's be honest, though. That may be a lot safer than doing it online sometimes.
You know, I
mean, honestly, when's the last time you saw 30 million credit cards stolen from the U.S. Postal Service?
I get it. But you know what? I gotta take my chances.
I don't disagree with you, Jim.
Again, you know, hearkening back to our Dragon Up the Past show, I am not, in fact, seeing anywhere in here that COD is an option.
Oh, no, I must be able to COD. Can I do that? Can I?
You know, there may be a couple people from a couple of the newer generations that have no idea what that stands
for.
Oh,
no, no, no. We've already squarely covered that, you know, many moons ago in an episode of Dragon Up the Past, having to explain what COD was to some of the audience. That said, it does not appear to be an option. So, ordering follies aside, let's start all talking right. Some specific games in here. We're just going to start at the top and sort of bang our way through. And that said, I'm going to blow right past 2040 and American Insurgency because I just don't want to step in any political minefields that somebody might come back and yell at us with a bunch of nasty grams.
Hey, Brant, real quick, though, just on that one and on Conquistadors, on just first blush of Conquistadors, if people haven't really read the description of it, I do find that both of those are interesting for that whole reason, that Compass has decided to publish those games.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well, outside of that, but I was going to point that out at some point.
Well, there was an amusing comment in one of my social media circles, and I don't remember if it was a Consim World thing or if it was a Facebook thing, but somebody was pointing out the 2040 and American Insurgency comes on the heels of Crisis 2020, comes on the heels of Minutemen, comes on the heels. I mean, we've been predicting this second American Civil War since they started making war games in the 60s, and they just have to keep pushing it out 20 years. Every time that you hit the next mile marker, you've got to push it out another 20 years. Seems to be what constantly happened. I really just don't want to dig into it too deeply because I just don't need the hate mail.
Nope, agree.
Aaron Armour, so glance over to the game shelf up here in the office, and I have a copy of Aaron Armour sitting over there from West End. Look, Bruce Maxwell makes great stuff, especially things that I enjoy playing. Bruce Maxwell was always one of those guys that designed a ton of stuff that I loved growing up. And so, you know, is Aaron Armour going to eventually find its way in, you know, onto my shelf? Yeah, probably. I mean, it's like Jim and Napoleonics. Don't ask silly questions. I'm just curious how much it's differentiated from the older one before I'm ready to take that plunge. So I know it's new unit values. I know it's new updated rules. Knowing what we know now, 40 years later, I just wonder if those updated values didn't make things even harder for the Russians. So, which one of you guys wants to cover Alexandros and Spartacus and, you know, take another couple of games off the top here?
Well, let me go back to something where Mirth and I agreed, parenthetically. Let me go to one of the games that we just played just last night. Velker and Mike and Dalinor got together and played a rousing game of Victory at Sea. So I like naval games. Yes, I do. This was one of those instances where I realized that the world is turning on me and I just may not understand it the way I want to. Because I looked down into that third row and I said, hey, Bismarck, that's really cool. There hasn't been a really good Bismarck game since Bismarck by Avalon Hill back when God was a private. And so I said, Bismarck, The Last Battle by Petros Sorios, I think, is a compact, I like that, strategic level, well, that seems appropriate, solitaire game.
No interest.
Really? I'm like, really?
Okay, maybe mild interest, but not great interest.
You are wrecking a... See? Not you lost two sales. Well done, Compass Games. Two sales shot. The solitaire guy doesn't like it, and you wrecked a perfectly good concept with... Why does Bismarck need to be solitaire?
For the people that don't have friends.
I guess. The whole point of a Bismarck game is the hunt, the chase. You know, trying to find it. Sink the Bismarck. The cry that rang... Oh, what's the song? But, you know, so... I was so frustrated.
I would be the first to tell you, and I do play solitaire games mostly, but I will be the first to tell you that given the choice between a solitaire-only game or a multiplayer game, I will go for the multiplayer version every single time. I really don't like strictly solitaire games, but it's rare that I like strictly solitaire games.
Well, I think at some point you sort of feel like you're just the dice chucker for the AI. And I think that's the part that kind of concerns some folks is it's either on rails and very deterministic and you're sort of stuck with that outcome no matter what. Or the randomness that's necessary sort of takes some of your player agency away. And I think it's tough to hit that sweet spot in between of... You know, I'm not just a foil for the AI and the game's not on rails. And I think DVG has done that fairly well with some of their leader series, but it's a tough thing to hit. It is a fine line to walk there. Speaking of solitaire stuff, though, that whole second row there, right? American Tank Ace, America Bomber, there's a couple of solitaire things built on some tried and true systems. you know, that Tank Ace system, you know, you do have the option for two or more on that one, Mike. So that might be one that you would want to consider there.
Like I said, I prefer that they have the option to play both sides. I mean, you can have a great solitaire, you know, play one side only game, but there's times you want to play that other side. you can't.
No, well, and look, I also have to say, what was my basic premise of my statement? I realized there's an incredible level of popularity here, because if you go down to row 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way at the right, what do we see? The reprint already of Combat.
Yep.
Which is, you know.
Yeah, I thought that just came out.
It did. I got it, you know, because I was interested in it. It isn't what I hoped it would be, which was Ambush.
But it's about as close as you're probably going to get to Ambush these days.
Yeah, but it's got a big chunk of dirt. It wants to be squad leader far too much.
Yeah. Well, and
Ambush was Combat, the TV series, done into a game.
Yeah.
And the designer's notes say as much. Combat ain't that. I get it. People like it. People enjoy it. I had nowhere near the fun with Combat or with Combat that I did with Ambush. Not close. I understand people like it, and that's cool. Clearly they do, because not only is there a reprint, which, as Mike said, it just came out, but in addition, if you take a look over at the left, well, there's Combat 2.
For which you have to have Combat to play the expansion.
Right.
Yeah.
Although, if you pre-order the both of them, you are halfway to the $3.99 that you need to take your $30 off from mailing in your paper form.
Right.
You're two-thirds of the way there. Why not?
For folks who are interested in Combat, Judge Dredd did a really good, very detailed AAR in our forums, if you want to go take a look. He did a playthrough of an entire scenario. Well illustrated, well explained, not just the rules, but the things he was thinking about as he's fighting his way through it. Did a fantastic job of sort of getting you in the feel of the game. Now, you may read it and go, yeah, it doesn't appeal. Okay, fine. Like, got it. That's not an issue, but you're going to get a very accurate picture of what that game is from reading stuff. Going back up a little bit, America Bomber, this is part of that series, that Evil Queen of the Skies series, the Queen of the Skies series that Greg Smith has built these solitaire games around. But Mike, going back to your whole thing of it'd be nice if you could play these things multiple ways, there's America Bomber, there's Intercept, there are a couple of these things with Queen of the Skies, Evil Queen of the Skies, there's fighting solitaire on both sides of the air war of World War II. And America Bomber is the hypothetical of what if the Germans had long-range bombers to hit the U.S. Compass also has flip side of the aerial defense of the U.S., not unlike the aerial defense of Isles. But they've built the rules in that you can turn these things into head-to-head games. So you can play – you need both games, obviously, but you can play them against each other. So there's a little bit of a toolkit involved, but you can take those solitaire games and turn them. So there you go. New toys. Barbarians at the gates. Who are the barbarians at the gates? Anybody care? Interestingly, Battle Hymn Volume 2 is on its way out, but Battle Hymn Volume 1 is not in the catalog. Either they're not bringing it back, or they've let it go, or not worried about the rights to it at the moment. But Battle Hymn 2 is on its way, and they, you know, we've got Combat 2 and Combat in here, but we've only got Battle Hymn 2.
Actually, Jim, or Brant.
Yeah.
Battle Hymn 1 is in the catalog.
Where is it?
Go to the listing. Yeah, the compact page.
Oh, that's why.
Gunpowder category.
That's why. They went and hit it.
Yep.
All right. Good call. They went and hit it.
I do have a Battle Hymn 1. I don't think I'm going to get Battle Hymn 2, though.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've already beat Bismarck to death. Blue Water Navy 2, for folks interested in the Blue Water Navy stuff, Ian, Rocky Mountain Navy, did a fantastic long article about Blue Water Navy for our site, explaining in great detail what Blue Water Navy is good at, what it's not as good at. A lot of comparisons, obviously, to the Fleet series, but it was a very good analysis of that game. So, BB Mike, you get to fight Blue Water Navy in the Pacific.
Yeah, it's, again.
World War III. I got it.
Yeah.
Not your thing, huh?
Yes, it's not. I wouldn't say I avoid it like you avoid the Civil War, but it's not. Yeah, it's not top of my list.
Brief Border Wars. I want to throw some love for Brief Border Wars, and then further down that same page, the East Front Operational Battles Quad. Not that I'm necessarily in love with East Front stuff, but I really like Compass bringing back the quad games. Those were some of my favorite things from SPI. And look, you guys have played a bunch of them. And you know, Jim, you've busted them out on Tabletop Simulator. And Mike, you're playing through one right now in My Own Worst Enemy.
And I've got the D-Day quad right behind me here, yeah.
Yeah, I love that we're bringing the quads back. I think that's a fantastic way to do things. You know, here's a basic set of rules. Here's a bunch of battles you can play off that basic set of rules. Go have fun, people. I think that's great. So, Jim, which Napoleonic quads do you want back? All of them?
Oh, sure. I mean, well, you're not going to get any of them back because Decision Games has them, and they're going to keep screwing those up till hell won't have it.
Yeah, well.
I mean, it's, you know, that precious SPI collection is very much in the care and keeping of people that don't know how to do reprints.
Yeah. Brotherhood and Unity, I have right behind me on paper a copy of an extended article from someone that had submitted for our site that I need to finish going through and editing. Perhaps it will be done by the time this podcast goes. Who are we kidding, right? what's interesting about Brotherhood and Unity, I don't know how much you guys have dug into this one. It's a three-player game, and those aren't real common in our field. Right? Everybody likes to have those nice balanced four-player, like 2v2 kind of things going on. It's a three-player game. It says 2 to 3 players, but from everything I've seen online, watch Kev's interview with the designer on YouTube. Everything about it is this is a three-player game. Even the article talking about it treats it as, you know, you're playing this as three players. And frankly, from what we know of the Yugoslav War, I'm curious how you pull it off as a two-player game instead of a three-player. It almost, you know, it's almost like you would want to add players instead of subtracting players to you know, if you were going to change the player count from a three-player game or not. So
not a fan of point-to-point movement systems. So unfortunately, I was out on that one.
Yeah. So it's fine as long as they're all hex-shaped points and equidistant, right?
Or accurately representing terrain.
Well, okay, fine. If you're going to be like that.
I'm going to, because you came for me. You came. I dislike that response. I've heard it from other designers, and my response is, that's a bit too easy.
I was just being a smartass, though. Mm. They actually meant it. All right, Mike O, Brothers at War. You were poking at me.
No, I haven't really looked at it much, so I can't really comment too much on it. I have not looked at it at all, really. So,
well, that's fair, because BB Mike is busy tearing down the walls to talk carrier battles and convince us all why it's the greatest thing ever.
Well, I hope it's the greatest thing ever. We'll see, I guess. Not until mid-2021. I did pre-order this one, and this is a follow-on to Victory Games Carrier, which I also own. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to this one. I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Mike.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, when they announced this on the town hall a couple of weeks ago, everybody that was watching just went bonkers with excitement on this. And then the next week they said this is their hottest selling pre-order.
There's not a lot of games out there like this. If you want to play a game like this, you have to go find Carrier or Flat Top or, you know, what's the other one? But yeah, there's just not a lot of these types of games. And the fact that this one is, you know, Solitaire, or the Solitaire value is high, it just makes that much more desirable, I think. Sorry, Jim.
I think that games like this, I said this about Carrier when I played it. I think they're stupid. I hate them. I seriously do. I think it's the dumb. This game actually makes me angry because you have Midway and you should play it, or you should play Flat Top double blind with an umpire.
No. See, I own two copies of Flat Top, and I've talked to Brett about this briefly. I would love to take this thing to Origins and get kind of like a Kriegspiel Flat Top game going.
There you go.
You have the referee, and you have the two tables with the Americans and the Japanese, and your runners. Yeah. It'd be awesome.
When the world is not on fire, we will absolutely do it. And if we don't pull it off at Origins, maybe we'll just run our own convention and do it there instead.
We'll have naval pods.
There you go.
Because Mike and I have talked about the fact that we would love to play Fletcher Pratt on a big floor.
I don't know that we can do that on the game hall floor, but I'm sure we can arrange it somehow.
But dude who always, and I gather he passed away, that ran the steampunk bugs on the other end of the hall.
Oh, the Fairy Queen and Country.
Yeah, apparently the guy who was running those games passed away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, God rest him.
Yeah.
But yeah, he, I was like, he had tons of room. We wouldn't need more than that.
The minis guys always get more floor space than we do, in part because of where in the building they are located. And it's funny because multiple times we have volunteered to move further away from the main doors in order to get a little more space. And I think they like the idea of us a little closer to the front because they want people to actually find some more gaming, which who knew? So, Mike, I think you make an interesting point on Carrier Battles Philippine Sea is that, look, there's how many games in this catalog that include a Battle of Waterloo or Stalingrad or Gettysburg or, you know, fill in the – how many do we have that are World War II carrier action? And, you know, who's the competition for this? Where, if not this one, where is the other game in that vein that you are buying? And – you know, the ones that you guys have mentioned, Flat Top and Carrier and Midway and whatever else, those games are older than half the people that are playing them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So if you're bringing this back, who's bringing it back? You know, this is it. This is your option. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that based on Mike O's report of this has become one of their fastest selling pre-orders, maybe this gives us gives Compass the impetus to – you know, start looking into some more carrier type warfare games out on the out in the World War II, and that it's not all.
Well, they did talk about like the original carrier battles that somebody else owns the rights to it.
Yeah.
So you know, anything that they do with carrier battles would have to be new properties.
Yeah.
So,
but it's not like there were only two of them in the PTO. I mean, there were a couple.
Right.
Go back and dig. We talked Coalition briefly already. Jim, anything else you want to say about it?
Oh, just a simple, light game. It's fine. It's fine. It isn't the best of theirs.
Yeah, they're not all going to be the best.
No, it's also got some of the component issues that I think Compass is struggling with right now.
Yeah.
I think that for all my criticisms of GMT, which are just, the GMT has generally, I stress generally, done a better job. I was very surprised to hear the Imperial Struggle, Imperial Struggle and Versailles having some component issues, although not substantial. That's just not something I would have expected from them.
Yeah.
But Compass has definitely struggled with quality control.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and let's hope that bringing some of the stuff back on shore helps clear that up a little.
So. Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's part of the disconnect between designer, developer, and company.
Yeah. Yeah, we've talked to the two combats already. CNC Tricorn has been out a little while, and I think plenty of folks know what they're getting there. Just the fact that it's called Commands and Colors, you kind of know 90% of what's happening when you open the box at that point. No,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you got a lot of stickering to do.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. No, it's I think, you know, it now is, for better or worse. I mean, my guy Doug calls CNC Cheese Whiz. I understand why. And I tell him, I said, it's really good Cheese Whiz though. and who doesn't like Cheese Whiz? But it is Cheese Whiz. You know, when you grab the Ritz and spread it on there, you know what you're getting. It's not going to suddenly be Rochefort.
All right, so we're at the 1 hour mark of the recording here, and we're barely into the seas and the catalog. Well, we're just almost done with it. So, Cradle of Civilization. I'll tell you, guys. You know, spend a week or so on the forums and you'll figure out very quickly that I'm a big fan of 4X sorts of Civ Builder kind of things. So something like this is the kind of thing that might appeal to me. I kind of want to end up seeing what actual players think of the tabletop style 4X Civ Builders, because I've just seen so many of them over the years that didn't live up to the promise. And so I hope this one does. I hope this one ends up finding its way to my shelf. But I'm always going to approach them cautiously. And that's not a reflection on Compass specifically so much as it is a reflection on the last 25 years of people trying to make tabletop games out of these.
I guess the way I read this was battles.
Yeah.
You know, this wasn't really a Civ building game, but maybe I'm just misreading it. So,
well, two players battle over whether – where'd it go? It's 2 to 6 players. So – while there are some, there are going to be some battles in there, I think 2 to 6 players and you know, 48 nation city epoch tiles.
Yep.
I mean, at that point, to me, it's almost more, you know, there is some civ building going on here.
There is. Yeah, it does say in one game civilizations rise, and then in the second game is two players battle over.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that it isn't. I don't think it's a civ builder. I think it's more of a grand strategic ancients game, to be honest.
Which I don't mind either.
Well, in both cases, I'll say the same thing. I mean, it's my interest. It's difficult to imagine my interest being less unless it were being played solitaire. Because I think this stuff is fully now owned by computers.
I totally hear you. And that's hard to dispute aside from liking the, you know, the tactile effect of having a tabletop game out there in front of you.
As a guy who owns more than his share of tabletop games, this is the sort of thing I watch guys. It's the overhead. Yes. It's the overhead.
Yeah.
It's you're watching guys played Advanced Civ, been there, done that, never going to do it again. Promise.
Well, I have the Fantasy Flight Civ, and it's not bad. Honestly, I'd rather play it on the computer. It's not bad. You know, some days you want the beer and pretzels game with the friends and something like that.
There is no Civ game. I'll put this out there. There is no Civ game that is not better on the PC.
That may be true. When I'm done playing them all, I'll let you know for sure. Dawn's Early Light looks cool. I'll be honest. All the graphics I've seen on that one looks cool. Folks have it showing up now because we're starting to see pictures of it online. It's not an era in which I normally give a rip, but it looks cool. I'm totally down with the graphics on that one.
Well, we don't, you know, on one hand, our 1812 game, so it's worth it. It's worth a shot.
Yeah, yeah, may totally be worth it there. Dawn of Empire, not a ton of Spanish-American War games out there.
No, good Lord.
And if I'm not mistaken, isn't Steven Newberg a Canadian?
Correct.
So we've got a Canadian doing a Spanish-American War game. Yep. Hey.
Yeah, again, not something which I'm personally interested, but I'm glad to see something like this out there.
Yes, yes, totally. I'm glad to see that folks are tackling important wars. You know, like you said, even if it's not something I'm personally going to dig into. All right, Death in the Trenches.
I will point out that Death in the Trenches is a strategic World War I coming out in mid-2021, along with Imperial Tide and the Lamps are going out second edition. All mid-2021, all strategic level World War I. Which I kind of find, you know, back to your point at the very beginning there, Brant, about you have three World War III games all coming out at the same time period. So I think
I will point out that this is Death in the Trenches by Ben Madison, and this will blow the others out of the water because he designs really good games, in my opinion. This one I pre-ordered, and I cannot wait to play it.
And let's also point out that should you order all three of those World War I games with the paper order form in this catalog, you probably only need to buy
$30 off.
Or
all I need is somebody's credit card number and code so that I can order these
things. 666.
Decision at Kasserine. Vance makes good games, and Vance is a really nice dude. And so if World War II is your shtick, backing something that Vance designed is not a bad way to go. I don't know how much more we need to say about Vance Van Borre's games, but Vance is a good dude. Defending America, so there's the flip side of your America Bomber game. And so, you know, Mike C., going back to your thing of you want the multiplayer option, well, you connect Defending America with America Bomber, and now you've got it. So that might be an interesting one to try and rig up as a double blind.
Flat top first.
Yeah, okay.
There you go. Fair enough. Yay. Agreed. Look at us agreeing. Look at that.
I knew this would happen. We're going to need some more whiskey in here.
Kumbaya next. Kumbaya, my lord.
Kumbaya. So Devil's Boats cracks me up a little bit here because it's only a $45 pre-order price. And that's a lot of components that they're listing in there. But then you look down at it and it starts to look a lot like all of the different player aid cards that are in Storming the Gap, where it's basically a player aid card for every page of the rules. And so I just start to wonder how much of all of those different things in the Devil's Boats component list.
It's actually and this just drives me nuts. We should do better than this. It's Devil Boats. That's a typo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even on the box right there, it's just Devil
Boats. That's why it's so aggravating.
Yeah,
say what?
It's right there.
The Compass catalog.
Now, I will say that on the chats last week, Devil Boat seemed to be getting a lot of attention from the folks that were watching the chat there.
So again, it's Pacific. It's the Pacific War again. It's how many games are like this out there? Again, there's not.
Night. Yeah.
Well, I will say this,
and I pre-ordered it.
Mike and I have seen this on Saturday Night Fights and Wednesday Night Warfare when we're doing naval games. There are a lot of squids out there, or guys who are the kids of squids, and God bless every one of them. And they got these stories that they're just, they love the naval history, and they are an underserved community. You know, it just, we used to do a lot more naval gaming. We really did. And I've been thinking about that because even in our small chat groups, it always amazes me how these guys from all over the world, we got British guys in our chat talking about the Solomon Islands, talking about Guadalcanal, listing, you know, how many of these carriers survived the war. It's crazy.
And it's 2 o'clock in the morning for them when they're doing it.
Thank you. There's a lot of passion for it. They love it. And the fact that there aren't quite as many games for them is surprising because they are rabid. Now, part of the problem, look at the reception that Mark Herman got for his admittedly classic Empire of the Sun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's held in something approaching reverence. You know, it's there's a market. There's a market. It's not my number one, but I my dad was in the PTO.
Yeah.
He was Army, but you know, my dad was in the PTO, and there were a lot of guys that wound up in there that had a lot of kids that are still kicking around, grandkids.
The East Front Operational Battles Quad, I don't know that we need to talk about too much because I'm not sure any of us are East Front aficionados other than to say I like the idea of bringing back the quads. I think that's kind of cool.
And that was going to be my only comment on that too is, you know, that's not my forte, and same with Brief Border Wars, but the introduction that Jim's given me to the quads, I'd be interested in getting those.
Yeah, no,
especially Brief Border Wars being subjects that you don't find anywhere else.
Yeah.
Where else are you going to find an El Salvador versus Honduras?
Yeah, this may be your shot. Yeah. And also, it is in the hands of a Brian Train who makes good games.
Yeah. So we're going to have to go a little quicker on the inside here. Otherwise, we're going to end up with a two-hour podcast.
Nobody wants that.
But, maybe somebody gets stuck in traffic on their commute that day.
There you go.
You know. So we're here to help them out. Just
hey, check it out. On the second page, there's a Battle of the Bulge game. New thing. God, stop it.
Well, top left, we got Enemy Action Kharkov, which, interestingly, Enemy Action Ardennes seems to have disappeared. I don't know if they've sold out and are not reprinting or what's going on, or if they're just trying to force you to buy Kharkov. But either way, Enemy Action Kharkov. So, again, another series moving along. The box branding is certainly consistent. It would be nice if the catalog branding was as well, if both games are in the catalog.
They are.
Oh, is it over on the little mini page again?
Yep, in the World War II category section.
Yeah, but you see, now you're making me go read the fine
print. $94 is the holiday price.
Yeah, you're still making me go read the fine
print. It's a big game. It's a big game.
Yeah, imagine that, a journalism major that doesn't like to read.
Nah, just not the fine print. Lawyers love me because I just blow past the fine print. All right, for Motherland, hey, check it out, a Russian front game. Interestingly, though, Japanese designer, so it would be interesting to see what, if any, different assumptions someone from a different cultural background brings to a game on a topic that we all know so well relative to others. Fill the Gap CSS, look, they actually got the CSS branding in the headline there, but interestingly enough, hey, what do you got down there? That little CSS box icon? It would be nice, guys, to reuse these things. I think of any of the big box World War III games, that's the one I'm probably closest to actually buying. And no offense, Compass, but I'm probably going to drive over to Scott's store here in town and buy it there so I can help keep the local game store in business. That may be where I end up taking the plunge if I get that one. So France 44, comments, thoughts, anybody?
Another World War II.
Hearing nothing, moving on. Flanks of Gettysburg. Hey, guess what? A Gettysburg game.
At the company level.
Yeah.
At the company level.
And it focuses on the two flanks, right? So just something maybe a little bit different.
I don't play Napoleonics at the company level.
No, I'm just saying, though, the subject may be just a little bit different than what you see for a lot of the Gettysburg games. But.
When I was at Buckeye Game Fest back in Columbus in 06, maybe 07, I think it was 06, a couple of the guys had 3 days of Gettysburg set up on one of the big tables there, and I swear over the 3 days of the weekend, it moved in real time.
Yep.
Granada, Last Stand of the Moors. That game's been released like three different times from three different publishers, hasn't it?
Yep, think so.
Okay, so I'm not hallucinating. This is, in fact, essentially the same game, just making
it. I think it is. I think it is, yeah.
Okay, we'll assume it is and then move on. Hitler's Last Gamble.
Battle of the Bulge game? Really? Ooh.
Okay.
My sarcasm is never going to stop on that. Okay.
Yeah. Indian Ocean region. So this one, look, again, it tells you in here, same game mechanics used in the South China Sea game, which is over on the other page. Guys, brand these things together. Let us know that this is, even if they're not an actual connected series of games that you can like shove the maps up against each other and play a monster game, like it's nice to know that this is part of a series that, if you like this one, go check out this other one that uses very similar rules.
And that's the key, though, Brant. I believe they did say on one of their town halls that these two games can be played together.
Great. Even better. Right. Why not brand them as such?
Exactly.
So, all right. Interceptor Ace 2. Hey, it's another one of those solitaire air games. But again, you know, this goes back to we've got Defending America. We've got America Bomber. We've got Interceptor Ace. Look, it's in the fine print over on the other side with the Night Fighter one. Why aren't we showcasing these together? Why aren't we making a big deal out of these solo air games, being all connected? Anybody got a comment on Imperial Tide? Come on, it's World War One.
I'll just say that this is based on the Pacific Tide game, which I do own, and that's a nice game. It's not very deep. It's very high level, and I will not be buying Imperial Tide.
That good, huh?
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with Pacific Tide, but it's kind of what Jim was saying. It's almost too high level at the point that it's set at. You know, it's area movement, and it's just, you know, you have one or two counters that you're moving. It's not a bad game, but it's not for me. I have Death in the Trenches coming. Like I said, I don't need Imperial Tide.
And Mike, you just put your finger right on it. And the things that aren't Napoleonics for me, I'm going to buy one game in a period. I'm not going to buy two.
Yeah.
That's, if you want to know where they lose with me, it isn't in the Napoleonic games where I'm hard put not to buy it. It's in the other periods in which I am interested. World War II, certainly British colonialism, which, by the way, not a single colonial game that I spot here, which is very, very interesting. I am going to be developing a hypothesis that we will see fewer and fewer, if any, colonial games in the near future.
So buy them while you can.
I think it's going to become a topic nobody wants to touch.
And yet these guys have Conquistador out there.
Yeah. But that's not age. Well, I suppose it is. I'm thinking of 19th century British colonialism.
But I will just say this on Conquistador, though. It's not the Spanish coming in and just taking over Mexico, right? It's different factions of conquistadors gaining allies in the Americas to fight each other then. So yeah. It's not just your traditional Europeans coming to conquer. So there is a different spin on that.
There is a little more to it. Yeah. No, that's fair.
Where is that?
The conquistadors.
Shut up. They didn't.
Yes, they did. The whole right side of the interior spread is all the thes.
Yeah, and I'm looking, and they still have listed colonialism is still listed, and that's one that I got really cheap, I think, a year ago. It's on the back page.
So. Incidentally, for folks that are interested in Pacific Tide, we do have a review of it on our site. So if people are interested, they can go take a look. Kharkov Battles, I find interesting. It's like two blocks down from Enemy Action Kharkov.
Okay, read the description of the Conquistadors, though. Wait a minute.
You're jumping ahead on me, man.
Read the description. You will seek out and discover them.
Yeah.
there's a critical verb missing.
Squatter.
Conquistadoring.
Yeah.
You know, what does conquistador mean? It does not mean discover. It does. That's awesome. It does not mean the seeker outers. It just, we live in a time of hot garbage. Anyway.
Manassas Designer Signature Edition. Anybody want to talk Civil War stuff? All right, let's keep going. All right, who wants to take on Maori? Come on. Nobody?
Again, another interesting, probably never going to see it again, subject matter, but
Napoleon's Eagles and two. I think we've probably beat that one to
Groovy
death. You know?
Oh yeah. Buy them, right. Have them. It's a fun system. I've played Napoleon's Eagles a bunch. Fun, simple system.
No Motherland Without, card-driven strategy game for one or two players, simulating tensions between the DPRK and the West from 1953 to the present day.
I'm like, I hope this game, and I feel this way about Maori too, by the way. I hope this game gets hugged and loved by those who have always wanted a game on this topic. And I would say to them, as I would say to anyone who has this narrow an interest, understand this is your game. I hope it's really good.
Yeah.
Because you ain't getting another one.
You're not getting another one. Exactly. Exactly. Well, and but like Maori, you know, for what it is, it's pre-colonial New Zealand. There's only so much space you've got for Maori too.
Right, right.
You know, there's only so many places you can go with that.
I hope it gets hugged and loved. That's
Napoleon's Imperium sucked up the first half hour of this show, so we're going to keep moving.
I'm not spotting anything about that table, so I'm going to move on.
NATO Next Door in Europe, the reboot of that one from Bruce Maxwell, again, right there in line with Doomsday Project and Third World War. This is strategic level Cold War goes hot in the 80s in Europe, and in this case, they're bringing back a game we all sort of know and love. And again, it's hard to know how they're going to go terribly wrong with this, given how good the original game was. So if they monkey around with it too much, then you're going to piss people off. You know, it's sort of, let's tweak a couple of things with some cleanup, but let's not really overhaul it too much, because the original, there was a lot right about the original.
This may be the one that people go to from a budget point of view, because it's the cheapest of the three.
And of the known, you know, of the two known quantities, Third World War versus NATO Next War in Europe, Third World War was a fairly complex animal, particularly once you tied in the other three games. And that one had the potential to be a monstrous beast, whereas Next War in Europe was, it had some chrome on it. You know, I mean, there was some complexity to it, but it was still a single topic, mostly one sitting game, unlike, you know, Third World War with all the bolt-ons. Ostkrieg, hey, we're playing an East Front game. Anybody care?
Mm-hmm.
Just checking. So Chris Davis, Operation 333 game. Chris Davis is one of the guys who's in some groups that I'm in on Facebook. And let me tell you, that dude is a designing machine. He had done a thing for some designer's notes on Hero of the Motherland way back when we first opened the doors at Armchair Dragoons, talking about his sort of solo system to take a lowly Russian private through World War II at a private's eye view there. This dude, every time I'm opening up Facebook, it's like, hey, I was noodling around with this idea for a design on something. It's like he's all over the map with a variety of different really good interests and a lot of really cool ideas. And it's almost like you want him to slow down long enough to hand even a half-finished product off to a developer to get some stuff done, because he's got a lot of really great ideas that I hope manage to find their way to print someday, like this one clearly did. So good for him. Operation Crusader. Hey, we're going back to World War II. Anybody? Moving on. Pacific Tide, we talked about. Panzerkrieg. Anybody? 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 All right. I mean, it's John Prados, right? So it's going to be
now,
a decent
set. Did you notice, though? Designer Signature Edition. I'm sorry. Never mind there. I was thinking something else.
Oh. But Prados does good stuff. So if you enjoy Prados games, I could totally see people jumping on that. I played the hell out of Third Reich growing up, and Prados has always been one of those design heroes of mine. It's going to be a good game. It's just not a topic I'm as interested on, given that there's 20 other things in here that I probably would jump on just as well. Pontiac's War, anybody? Going back to...
Easily one of the most interesting for me. Fascinating conflict, fascinating war, easy order.
Even with the point-to-point map?
Yeah, with this one, yeah, because I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to... Nobody's going to do a tactical battle. This wouldn't really support tactical gaming.
Fair enough. Prelude to Revolution, Russia's descent into anarchy.
Another fascinating topic. This part of expanding our understanding of games. I've got a very good friend whose son is a graduate student who's studying this period and is very excited to see this come out.
Yeah, I'm probably going to take a hard look at this too.
Yeah.
Just due to the period.
Yeah, it's interesting, but it's cards and plastic cubes, so it better be really
no,
good.
No. That's I'm out on it for sure, for almost certainly that reason. But I you know, God bless people trying to go into new niches like the Pontiac's War and this. And I want to be clear, and Maori too. It's like, you know, yeah, let's do something else. Absolutely.
And keep in mind, this reads not so much as a war game, but as a political game.
Correct. Correct. So, it's a conflict game. There's no
yes.
doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not unlike Fort Sumter from GMT, it's the political machinations and moving your influence through the game far more than it is how straight your muskets shoot.
Yep.
So.
And that's fine. And that's just fine.
Red Poppy's Campaigns, Volume 3. Volumes 1 and 2 were really popular. That's how you end up with a third.
But it's a great system.
Yeah, it's World War I tactical, and it's, you know, lots of people love it. And I don't know, there's a ton to talk about there too.
This, however, is an era and a system. I'm going to play JTS World War One squad battles.
Yeah. Yeah. Roma Victrix. Anybody?
It's interesting to me. I'm kind of starting to get a little more interested in some of the Roman stuff again. I'll take a look at this one. I don't know if I'll order it or not, but I'll take a hard look at it.
See what happens when we make you GM Time of Crisis. Now, all of a sudden, you're donning your Roman helmets. And the Russia campaign. Jim, do you remember one of our Dragging Up the Past episodes, the 256-player tournament of the Russia campaign at GM?
Yeah. So GMT has, for roughly the same amount of time that it's had Commands and Colors, Napoleonic's Le Grand Battles, had the designer edition of this. So are we just having dueling Russian campaigns going on?
Perhaps.
Very weird. Very weird.
They are testing the maxim of you can never have too many East Front games, and you know what? People are going to buy them all.
And folks, the pre-order price is $38. This is a stocking stuffer.
Yeah, you're right.
For a fairly big stocking.
Yeah, I'm in on the designer edition at GMT, so.
All right, Mike O. Schutztruppe.
Yep, got it on pre-order.
What else you want to tell us about it?
World War One, Southeast Africa. I mean, not a subject that's hit heavily in a full-blown game.
And a hugely important topic, and really an amazing. If you read Keegan, if you listen to Keegan, which is what I did on that, it's great stuff. I'm interested. I'm absolutely interested in this.
Yeah, I mean, that side of the war lasted all 4 years.
Yep,
and kept you had a large number of Allied troops
and you
occupied.
Had some crazy characters, some mm-hmm. crazy
yeah.
characters.
Yeah, the Guns of the Ascari game from Against the Odds, I think, is the only other one that I can think of off the top of my head that covers similar campaign. I'm sure we'll probably get like 10 different comments, you know, through social media saying,
"You forgot about this other one."
Well, and I stated, you know, full blown games. You're probably going to find some of the magazine style games, light games that cover the topic, but not too many full blown.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the stuff from Against the Odds magazine, the playtesting and development of some of the games may seem a little uneven, and I know Craig Grando's art choices really drove some people up a wall, even though he was doing what the publisher had asked, which was to give us something different besides just the usual NATO symbols and three numbers, that Craig tried some different stuff just to see what would stick. But Against the Odds has always come across to me far more as a game that happens to include a magazine with some other stuff to read, more than a magazine game kind of like the S&T stuff. That's just been my personal experience with them. I've really seen the stuff from Against the Odds as far more beefy games than you find in a lot of other magazines. So, but Schutztruppe, you know, going back to the point there, again, this is, Jim, you know, the existence of Guns of the Ascari probably belies your comment similar to Maori or the No Motherland Without, which is, you know, if this is your thing, here is your one game. But it's probably you could count them on one hand, even if it's more than one.
Yeah, I will say, you know, like this Maori, No Motherland Without, you know, even if it's not your thing, you're just looking for something different. That's what.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, these are games that, hey, you know what? I want to try something that's totally different besides World War II Eastern Front.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just looking at this one, the thing that catches my eye, it says, and realistic supply rules. Hmm.
Which means half of the audience just immediately tuned out.
That is a hard Roger.
Yeah. Silent War Deluxe Edition. I mean, there's a whole series of submarine games out there. These aren't really sort of sneaking up on anybody. So I do like the solitaire rating on it, though.
Yes.
The solitaire rating is perfect. So, all right. We're at an hour and 30 minutes, and we're almost done with the interior spread here. So South China Sea reprint. It's South China Sea. Like, if you like the original game, get in on the reprint, you know. But like it says, this is a straight reprint. So this isn't, you know, this isn't like a second edition. This is, here's the game again. But I do go back to, you know, look, if this is part of a series and you've got the Indian Ocean region, let's tell us it's, a, you know, give us the series. Make it more obvious. Spitfighter Ace, guys, branding. Come on, work with us here. And look, we all know that Eckenfels is going to order Spitfire Ace, right?
Well, if I was going to get a World War II game, I would probably get a Battle of Britain style type game.
Yeah.
So, you know, Spitfire Ace may be one of those that I would take a look at if I was going to go that route.
All right. Stellar Horizons. we got a non-war game invading our war game catalog here.
This is almost the clearest argument for why Compass Games' efforts are greater than GMT's at this point.
This is on my short list.
Because it took us all the way to the STs before we found a non-war game?
Correct.
Okay, fair enough.
It sounds interesting to me, but at that price point, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, if they want to send me a review copy, that's one thing, but it sounds very interesting. I think I'd probably love it, but
I also adore the fact that whoever designed this felt that they were able to screw down the future of mankind sufficient. This discusses the history of mankind between 2030 and 2169.
What about that little event back in 2040? They
right. I mean, they forgot about 2040. Who knew?
Didn't Robert Heinlein already write that history, though?
Right. Oh, I see. So it's a known history. I got it.
I mean, we've had Heinlein's history of that era since, since the 60s. There's a revolt in 2100. I mean, Heinlein called his book The Revolt in 2100.
It's all on the Galactic Encyclopedia.
Yeah. I do like that the playing time. I mean, there's a bit of a range within the playing time there. I want to know who's getting the one-hour game of Stellar Horizons in.
Well, so that's – and I got into this with the Blitz. It's probably just a little small scenario versus the grand campaign.
Probably. But still, that's a
learning thing. It's a learning thing.
There you go. It's a learning scenario.
Yeah. Like I said, this is – if I make a purchase – when I make a purchase here at the holiday season, this is probably the one I'll grab.
Really?
Yes. The subject matter just interests me.
Huh. Well, when you get this converted into Tabletop Simulator, Jim and I will play with you.
There you go. That's
and
a date.
I will do that. And actually, Compass is starting to work on getting their games onto TTS.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, I think it's – well, we'll see.
Yep.
All right.
I should probably contact him because I did the entire Pacific Tide game already in Tabletop.
You should.
Simulator, so I should probably contact him.
Seriously. Yeah, you should.
All right, guys, Tank Leader, bringing back the old favorite. It's an old favorite for a reason, but let's see what happens when they bring it back. Let's hope it lives up. Test of Faith, again, it's an OSS-level game. We could use some branding there. I'll be honest, you guys mentioned that you saw that and were thinking that it was aiming near future. Reading through it, I wasn't. I was assuming sort of looking backwards through the lens of all the different Arab-Israeli wars, not unlike the old Avalon Hill box that ran the gamut from 48 up through 73 at the time.
Yeah. And to be fair, if you actually read the map descriptions, it talks about the Golan Heights and and Sinai. Well, but in the description itself is where if you're looking at that, you're thinking this is going to be World War III when you see the Doomsday Project mentioned.
Yes, but that said, whether it's looking backwards or looking forwards, if you're fighting a conflict with the Israelis, you're probably fighting on the Golan Heights and in the Sinai. There's just, I mean, it's that or the Med. You know, I mean, there's just only so many places you can go. So the Africa campaign deluxe going to be a lot like the Russia campaign deluxe. I mean, they're bringing back a classic game and they're spiffing it up some. And let's see what comes out of it all.
And a third North African World War II game.
Only three? We haven't read all the ones in the fine print, have we?
No, just the featured ones.
Just the featured ones.
And none none will be better than the. Oh, why can't it come to my head right now?
What after four?
No, the black by the Columbia game, Desert Fox.
Okay,
play Desert Fox. You're done. You're fine.
Yeah, Battle of Armageddon. I think is going to be one of those curious head scratchers that
that to me is a vanity project by somebody.
Yeah,
I saw it months ago. And I said, look, I have to be super careful here. I will put it out there. It's not a secret. I make it no secret. I don't make an issue of it. But I'm an observant Christian, okay? I really don't like it when observant Christians do games like this. I guarantee you that's what this is about.
I could well be. It'll be interesting to see what the reception for that one is.
I just
once it actually gets on tables.
I always give them the hairy eyeball. Not a fan. Not a fan.
I think we've talked to conquistadors a bunch. Let's go conquistadoring or not.
Exploring.
Yeah. We are not going to conquistador, Brant. That is not, Commander, that is not what is happening.
We're exploring. We're seeking out new life and new civilizations.
Fair enough.
We are boldly going. Yes.
There you go.
The Doomsday Project, again, I've been following this on ConSim World for a decade now. Some of the early graphics that they had proposed were actually kind of cool, and so I'm curious to see what survived. I'll tell you, the pre-order price being $30 off makes that one very attractive. However, I kind of want to see what people think about it before I take the plunge on that, even though that's so completely right in the realm of things that I would always, you know, just almost turn into an auto buy. I kind of want to see what people think about it before I jump on that, because it is, even though it's, you know, based on the OSS series, it is a newer thing. It's not a tried and true classic like Third World War or NATO War in Europe. Enemy at the Gates, Battle for Berlin in 1985. Yeah. So how much or how little is this going to be all that different from the Berlin 85 S&T classic? Now, obviously, this one's going to be bigger with 4 maps and 8 counter sheet. But again, this is a CSS series game, just like the Fold the Gap game. Branding, guys, work with us here. Help us out. There's your next North Africa game. Anybody got anything? Hearing nothing, moving on. Korean War, anybody?
Absolutely. Essential purchase, already have it.
Hey, see, I don't have anything on the Korean War. I am looking at this one.
Oh, no, this is this. Get this.
I'm thinking. It's
normative. I have the original, I should say.
Yeah, I think this is a must buy.
You know, the Vietnam game that this is the sister to or brother to, whichever you choose, is still the best game on the topic. It's crazy.
Yeah. Lamps are going out the second edition, so it is expanded and upgraded and updated. I will tell you, as far as graphics in a war game go, Lamps are going out is one of hands down the best period and thematically appropriate graphic productions you're going to find.
I agree. It's a beautiful game. It really is. Yeah.
By all accounts, it plays well, but it kills on a tabletop. It looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. Third World War, I think we've talked about a bunch. The descriptor interests me in that whole, you know, date covering not one, but 4 true wargaming classics. Are they putting all 4 of the games in one box?
That's my understanding.
I think they are.
Yeah. You're going to get everything from the Arctic Circle all the way to the Persian Gulf.
And you should, based on what you're paying for it.
Yeah. For $135 bucks, you damn well better, because you could buy all 4 of them on the aftermarket at $135. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be so like a 12-inch thick box. I mean, it's going to be like a cube.
But so for me, what I'm looking for, and I don't know if anybody, I'm somebody who's got to remember, the SPI's World War III. I'm looking for a third World War with the entire map of the world. And I don't think that game is out there.
No, you've got essentially what this is, right? I mean, you've got the global ones, right? Not that this is anywhere part of this conversation, but I'm stoked about ICBM on the PC.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, Jim, we're going to talk after the podcast is done recording.
Okay.
So, all right. The War of Europe and the War Pacific.
I have pre-ordered the War Pacific, and, you know, I'm agonizing. It's like, you know, I've got half the thing already. And if you put these two together, you've got a game you can play for 5 years straight, right? So.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, that's a game. That is a game if I did such things. I have thought now, and Mike, I may drag you into this. Just having a Shaco game that we do one turn a week.
Look at this. Playing time, 50 hours for a
full campaign. This is what I'm saying.
This is a commitment.
Set up a freaking ridiculous... But see, that's what Tabletop Simulator is for. Set up a... You know, and actually, Vance is going to get it done because he's actually working on World at War. He's actually working on a TTS implementation for it. But he wants to do one of the giant scenarios.
Yeah.
And what you do with that, you don't do it in one Saturday night fight. Shoot. We're going to play Leipzig starting on the 10th. We're going to start on the – what day is Saturday? Shoot. Yeah, on the 17th. We're going to start – that's going to take a month. It's going to take a month of Saturdays. But you set up a World at War game, or you set up a really big Shaco game. Hey, just poke at it for an hour. You do one turn.
Jim, you're the guy who's going on to 2 years of the same Kriegsspiel on the forums.
Excuse you? We are over 2 years, my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
You take that back.
You're making my point for me.
So, yeah, no, I noticed that we're 2 years since coming to the Dragoons.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's like that.
Traders of the Air looks pretty cool. There's a bunch of folks that have posted some unboxings and stuff online. That's one of those ones that you can get something from Compass, get your family to play, and then come back around with a war game from Compass and go, but it's the same publisher. See if they fall for it.
Yeah, no.
And Bob would probably like this one, right?
Perhaps.
It's steampunk.
It's steampunk. I would go for steampunk stuff. War for America.
It's only $34, too.
All over War for America. Like I said, this is Gilbert Collins. If you've ever watched his channel, he actually talked about this as he kind of talked about it as he was designing this thing, and he would do some sample playthroughs of it. So he was really – he really enjoyed 1776, which I also have. But, yeah, I think this is going to be fantastic.
All right, Western Front Take Ace, World War One stuff. Mike O, you in on it yet?
No, not yet.
Not yet. Key being the yet.
Yep.
So we're just going to play Flying Circus on Tabletop Simulator from SPI.
There you go. World War II Commander Battle of the Bulge.
Oh, look, guys. It's a Battle of the Bulge game.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Now, I know you're being silly, but I haven't seen a Battle of the Bulge game before. This is interesting.
I'm going to come right through the microphone.
Battle of the Bulge. What was that battle?
When was that? Was that Hitler? Or
oh, wait a minute.
Stalin?
That's the one my grandpa was in. Never mind.
Oh, my God.
Zeppelin Raider, solitaire tactical level game. Mike, you in on Zeppelin Raider?
I have no interest in World War One Zeppelins, so no for me.
If I got an area World War One game, this is probably the one I'll go with. Only because it's a different subject matter.
Yeah.
It is different. I'll give it that.
Interesting.
All right, guys. We're approaching 2 hours, and we haven't even got to the fine print. Are we going to punt on the fine print this time?
I think we should punt on the fine print.
I second that motion.
I'll third it.
Otherwise, we're going to be here till the morning. All right. So the 2020 Compass Games Holiday Catalog. Overall thoughts, impressions, comments, concerns. Once around the radio dial. Jim, what do you think?
B-. Some stuff I like, but not as much as last year. And I agree. By the way, I didn't mention. I agree with your point on branding. I think it's important. All that said, I'm happy Compass is in this space. I hope they work on the QA stuff. It's just really, really important, and I am grateful for them. Unlike a lot of other companies, including Academy Games and GMT Games, they're staying with their market. Love them for it.
Absolutely, Mike O.
The branding, I think, was spot on. I think the other thing that I kind of find interesting is they've given a lot of space to games that are coming out a year from now that I understand why they're wanting to get some of these up in front of some people. But I think in some ways, I think they should have maybe looked at using some of that space for some of their popular games that are already in print.
Move some of the stuff out of the fine print section.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, Blue Water Navy, Third World War, which I've already, you know, I've pre-ordered, but it's a year away at least.
Yeah.
You know, maybe give those some little smaller sections and then highlight some of your popular games that's already available to order now for this Christmas. This is this year's Christmas catalog. But 90% probably of what we're seeing highlighted is coming out sometime next year.
Well, so the counterpoint question to that, and so I agree with you. Let me start with that. The devil's advocate question is, are they not doing that because the people looking at this catalog already have the ones that you're talking about that they should be buying for this holiday?
And that's a good – and that could be a good point because they did state that if you're on their mailing list or you've bought something from them and had them shipped directly from them, that's who gets this catalog, right? So it's not like this is a mass mailing going out to 100 million households.
Yeah.
So there is some point to that. But it's like I said, at the same time, you know, to me, if you're advertising for this holiday season, you want to be pushing the stuff that you can get off the shelf now.
That's actually going to be under this year's tree.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, no, I totally understand. It's a fair point. So Mike C.
Just to echo what they're saying, that's a fantastic catalog. One thing I didn't mention earlier that I do want to point out is in Asterix, all new games will have thicker counters. And that's one of my complaints, I think, with Compass, but I'm glad I'm reading that. I think that's going to be awesome.
And that's where some of the delays are coming in, and they're switching to American printers.
Yeah, so thicker counters will be appreciated. And the other thing is, I like how they've highlighted the solitaire. If you notice, solitaire under all the games is nice, bigger letters. It stands right out, so you know you're going to get a nice solitaire game.
You're just making it your mission to piss off Jim tonight, aren't you?
He's all right. I mean, he has made very, very clear. And look, I want to be very clear on my attitude about solitaire games. I don't like them. but I am humbled by the fact that I clearly have had something drive right past me, you know?
Yeah.
Because these companies are not about, you know, oh, you hate these games. That's what we'll make for you. We'll make more of the things you hate. No, they're making games people like.
Yep.
Absolutely. Holy sweet crap. And while we can wrap this, is this in the catalog or is this one of the things they announced tonight?
What's that?
World in Flames Collector's Deluxe Edition.
What's that, like $250?
$229.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sweet. I think that one's not in the catalog, I don't think.
No.
Yeah.
Sweet. Fancy.
$139.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were announcing two new games tonight.
And that appears to be one of them.
That might be both of them.
Well, and they have gotten into a relationship with the Australian design group because that's where they got that Napoleon's Imperium from.
Yeah, yeah.
That, how big? There we go. 5 hard-mounted maps.
Jeez. All right, we're going to have to save that for another podcast because we're going on 2 hours. Look, and Rex and Matt Kirschenbaum didn't take this long to talk about Scramble for Africa and the entire blow-up over that, right? This is the longest podcast we have ever done. Ever
4,900 counters.
Yeah.
So that's why you need that oval table from the.
Well, this is World in Flames. Oh my God. God bless you.
Just remember, Jim, Velker graduates high school in what, 6 years? You can convert his room into your, you can get that table in
here. It's going to take him long to clip the counters.
I thought you were going to say that would make a great graduation present for him.
And yeah, right. And because that's what every young man wants under his tree, the deluxe collector's edition of World in Freaking Flames.
We were going to buy you a car, but we decided to spend the extra $100 and get you the deluxe collector's edition of World in Flames.
And now we must buy this oval table to play Napoleonic Games on it as well.
Oh, so
cool. Right, your room's just moved to the couch in the living room.
That's it.
All right, guys. So the Compass Games catalog, for all its warts, is still one of the most glorious things that we get in wargaming every year, and we get it for free. And we need to commend Compass for continuing to do this, because whatever gripes we might have about it, we have a thing in front of us to gripe about. And it is, look, we're wargamers. We gripe. That's what we do. But it is a glorious thing. And Compass, please don't stop doing this. You know, we point here, out the foibles because we care and we want it to be better. But we don't ever want it to go away. So please don't throw up your hands and go, well, screw you guys. You're going to complain. Don't do that. Right. No. We love this thing, warts and all. It is a fantastic promotional tool for you guys. Other wargame companies need to fall in line and start doing something similar, even if it doesn't fold out to the size of a poster map. But that kind of tactile, handheld paper catalog is just cool. And you need to keep doing it. And we love you for it. And we're on 2 hours already, guys. So I think we need to call it a night on this. So thank you, audience, for sticking with us through all of this. We really appreciate it. Compass, thank you for bringing us back some great nostalgia in the form factor, as well as bringing us a lot of great games. And we appreciate it. So we're going to say goodnight on the podcast. And thank you, everyone, for listening. All right.